Thank you, Alex. David and I have fiendishly talked about who was going to say what over the next hour. So what you'll hear from me is a very basic introduction to Armenian manuscripts, Armenian writing, and the digital age of Armenian manuscripts, as it were. And so I thought we'd very briefly talk about Armenia in general, and I apologize to those of you who already know everything about Armenia, but I thought talking briefly about the history and culture that we are dealing with would be useful. We'll talk about the genesis of the alphabet and its various uses, and then, more importantly, some writing styles. Some of you may have had the misfortune of having heard me talk about this before, so apologies once more to those. And then finally, the aspect of this that might be most interesting to this crowd, the digital tools that are either in development or that have been developed for the purpose of studying Armenian manuscripts. I also have a handout for you because I'm vaguely old-fashioned. The handout only contains the Armenian alphabet and some pronunciation aids, as it were, but might still prove useful for those of you who want to keep a memorandum of all this. So, Armenia is, of course, a country in the Caucasus nowadays, but at its earliest attestation in the 6th century BC in an old Persian inscription, it was situated in a rather different place, or rather more broadly, in what we might call the Armenian highlands, surrounded by the Caucasus, Media Turpatenis, or modern Azerbaijan, the Taurus Mountains, and so forth. It's been ruled for centuries since its first attestation, if not to say millennia, by Iranian people, and at its largest extent in the 1st century BC, spanned all this way, so not only in what is modern Armenia, around about there, but also to encompass parts of Iraq, Syria, Turkey, and Iran. At this point, we hear from the Greek historian and geographer Strabon that in the area that Armenia encompassed, everyone spoke the language of the Armenians, which I'm fairly sure we don't believe, but that's generally the case, I suppose, for ancient historians. More importantly, Armenia then shrunk again to what would be more or less its borders in one form or another for the next few centuries, but doesn't develop a written tradition and an attestation till the 5th century AD. And the first attestation of Armenian writing that we find is curiously not anywhere near Armenia, but in the Holy Land, in a lapidary inscription that we shall see a little later. The first surviving manuscript that we find is from the 9th century, the Queen Mulcair Gospel, and also is representative of most of the manuscripts that we have in being a gospel manuscript. We do find various other early texts that are not biblical in nature. Those are often translations of Greek philosophical or other instructive texts, and we will come to see one or two of them as we go along. Just to re-encompass Armenia in a modern context, so the country has shrunk a wee bit to this extent, rather than completing half of the Middle East, and houses in its capital, Yerevan, the center for the study of Armenian manuscripts in Matan Adadan, which is the place to go to if you want to study Armenian manuscripts. In other institutions that have Armenian manuscripts include the Bibliothèque Nationale de France, so the BNF in Paris, the Bodleian Library, of course, with 140 manuscripts of our own, the John Rylands, and of course the British Library, who shall not remain nameless. Now, a little more about the alphabet itself. Supposedly it was invented by Meserop Mashtots, about a century after the Christianization of Armenia, largely for the purpose of writing down the gospel and liturgies in this language, which had previously been held in either Greek or Syriac. Both languages were not accessible to the sort of common people, as it were, and thus it proved necessary to sort of counter the reinvasion of Zoroastrianism by finding a way of penning, of writing down, of stabilizing the gospel and other holy scriptures in Armenian. The way that supposedly the alphabet came into being is by a divine vision. You make of that what you will. More importantly is the notion that we end up with an alphabet that is reasonably well suited for writing Armenian, in having 36 letters to begin with, 38 later on, all of which correspond very neatly to the phonological and phonetic oppositions that Armenia has to offer. So, for example, a voiced, unvoiced, and unvoiced aspirated opposition, including also fricatives of this type. I've given you some historical context underneath, more for your general edification than for anything else. The alphabet has not exclusively been used for writing the Armenian language itself, but has also been used, for example, for writing Kurdish and in Ottoman times for Ottoman Turkish. What you see on the bottom right is a mid-17th century, not manuscript in this case, but an early print, which writes the stories of Faris and Vena in Armenian script, but written or is in the Turkish language, as it were. And as someone who normally reads either Turkish in Latin script and Armenian in Armenian script, I can only tell you that it's absolutely ridiculous to read, partly because they choose to represent Turkish umlauts, as it were, in very curious fashions, but we can talk about that another time. The script survives into the modern age. It is still used for modern Eastern Armenian and modern Western Armenian spoken in the Republic of Armenia, as well as in the Armenian diaspora in, well, everywhere really, but mainly in America, France, and I think up to 18,000 or so even in this country. And what you see on the bottom left is a newspaper that I think is still ongoing, Harach, in Armenian language, published in France. To give you a first glance at a manuscript, and to amuse you, this is a doodle page from a 13th century lectionary. This, of course, is not part of either the liturgy or the lectionary itself, but rather someone having a good time drawing figures. I have counted, it is indeed 20, as the manuscript here would suggest. Curiously, however, what it writes is ikosi, the Greek word for 20, not the Armenian word for 20, which tells you once more that Armenian has been used, Armenian script has been used for various purposes. Now, to get a little more serious, this is one of the earlier lapidary inscriptions that I've mentioned from Nazareth, where you can see a presumably pilgrim to the Holy Land having left their name on a stone, Anania Aremat. We can't really read much of the rest. But these letter shapes, as we shall see in a moment, and as you can to a certain extent see from your handout as well, do correspond to what we are expecting for early and the earliest form of classical Armenian majuscules or uncials. This type of script, the earliest type of script that we find in manuscript and indeed in inscriptions, is called Yakatagir, iron script, and has survived into modern usage to a certain extent as the basis of capital letters, but it is not by far the most commonly used script overall. Before we move on to the actual manuscripts themselves, a few words about the development or about the correspondence of Armenian letters to other shapes. We must assume that at least a certain amount of the alphabet was inspired by Greek letters, partly because it is called the Aifuben, like the alphabet, so after its first two letters, partly because the order corresponds reasonably well to Greek with certain interpolations, because we write the letter U, sorry, the sound U with a digraph like classical or Hellenistic and later Greek would have done, and also because, as we shall see on the next slide, a few letter shapes do correspond quite neatly to contemporary Greek handwriting. Other proposals for inspirations in other scripts have been made concerning, for example, the letter da, which supposedly could correspond to a Syriac shape, and various others. Whether that is actually reasonable is a question that I shall leave open at this point, largely because not enough work has been done on it, and secondly because I think it's not reasonable. To give you a couple of instances of the correspondences between Greek and Armenian letters, I've given you here the letters representing R, E, Z, K, and P, and the white backgrounded shapes are all the minuscules of Greek handwriting at roughly the time of the invention of the Armenian alphabet, so the beginning of the 5th century or the late 4th century. And I would say that these are reasonably close correspondences. Those of us who are used to earlier or later Greek manuscripts, or indeed to Greek printing, as it were, might not find the Greek too easily recognizable, but neither too weird. So notice, for example, that if we look at the letter representing P, we have these three nice parallel strokes, one here more exaggerated than the others were. So that gives you a reasonable, if extremely short, background in the Armenian alphabet, which is where we come into the nitty-gritty of the various writing styles that we find. We'll try and look at all of them briefly. There are main handwritten, sort of main styles that we would use for actual texts that are meant to be read in at length, and then there are the ornamental styles, which are great fun to try and decipher. The main types that we find are Yerkatagir, so the uncial script, the earliest form, so-called iron script, which exists from the very beginning, even in epigraphy, and as I say, is used still for headlines or and has given us the modern majuscules. Bulorgir, the round script, arises a little later in the 10th century, becomes, I think, the most commonly used form by the 12th century, and forms the basis of the modern minuscules in type. And then we have Notargir, the notary script, which arises a little later and is, even in print, where it is used as the sort of italics or cursive form, very difficult to decipher if you don't have a magnifying glass at hand, because it is rather small and minimally distinguishes certain letter shapes, as we shall see. And then there is the modern written form, Shiragir, which in good handwriting is perfectly legible, and as we shall see in bad handwriting, is utterly squigulous. And then there are the ornamental types, Tirchnagir, bird script, Tzikagir, and the fish script, and Mardagir, two of which we shall see delightful examples of. So, to give you an example, this is Yerkatagir from a Bodleian manuscript, B1, where we see a brief phrase, and all I want to point out is the minimally different letter shapes here, which are in uncial script and executed uncial script reasonably easily differentiable. So here we have the letter O, or the letter representing the sound O, as opposed to the one representing the shape R, with a little stroke at the side, as opposed to the E and A sound, where we have different directions, here an ascender, here a little hook. And finally, the difference between a, where's the other one, between a W sound and an E sound, one with a small horizontal line, one with a proper half ascender, as it were. These shapes are all very important, of course, but over the time and over the development of the various types of script become less well differentiated. Here is an example of a later of the more common script, Bulorgir, where you can also see the size of the letters and the sort of vastness of them decreasing and it becoming more and more difficult to differentiate an R from a T, with only the horizontals stroke being at a different position. We also start to develop digraphs and ligatures, like here with Yev, where the E sound, the E letter, which we for example see here, is merged with a small W, and could look like another letter, namely N, were it not for the hook up here. And this type of script is by far the most common across the manuscripts that we have. Now comes the bane of all Armenologists, Notargir, the script that does everything we don't want it to do. Which is a vary on the capital letters that we've seen in the Akpetagir and Borogir. This is the Ayat that you've seen before in, for example, this shape, which is rather different, if not completely alien. We again see minimal differences if you look at all the letters that have a blue arrow pointing to it. So here, an E, versus a W sound, an E sound, minimally differentiated by the little serif or hook at the bottom, if you like. A delightful little three-dash squiggle that could be absolutely everything, either an A or a T. We can only tell by context, really. This is from a Himayil, a phylactery, a protective magical scroll, if you will. And so you see, just as a piece of, I don't know, trivia, a name in a slightly different ink here. This is the name Aram, the possessor or the holder of this scroll, whose name had been inserted in there, presumably having previously scratched out someone else's name from whom they bought the scroll. And only in this way did it take its function and would protect him magically against whatever there was, presumably Brexit. So this is the script that I have not transcribed for you at the bottom, at the top or bottom, because honestly I cannot read it. And so far I have not found anyone who could fluently do so. I believe even native speakers have at least some trouble identifying this. This is an actually very interesting manuscript from the early 20th century, representing a village history that must have been kept in one family for a number of generations. It was found, I believe, in 1915 or 16 in a village that then belonged to the Ottoman Empire, and let's say suddenly drops off when terrible things happen to the Armenians in the Ottoman Empire as part of the genocide done to them, as it were. So I will not try and read this or decipher this for you, other than saying that I despair it and I would like to see a PhD student do this and transcribe it properly. Oh dear. Now coming to the ornamental styles, this is the bird script Tirchinagir that we see. We will zoom into it. It's usually used for rubrics and sort of headlines, as it were. Delightfully, this is the beginning of Dionysios, the Armenian translation of Dionysios Thraxtechne Grammatica, the art of grammar, where if you follow your alphabet, as it were, you can probably just about distinguish the K sound, the last letter of the alphabet, and then with an E, R, A, and a K. Notice, however, how the author for some reason has decided, presumably by error, that the A should be added up there rather than going to the next line. Bird script is wonderful because, of course, it does not occur only in Armenia but also in other surrounding cultures. More hilarious, I personally think, is Martagir, the man script, as it were, or human script, particularly if you consider how contortionist one has to be in order to assume some of the shapes that we are here seeing. And we start with a G, as it were, and then have E. Notice also how the letter shapes are not necessarily always particularly identical, with two N's here looking slightly or rather different. Now, this is where I move on from the various scripts that we've seen and talk about what we do with these scripts and how we recognize them. One particular project that's going on at the moment is Kalfa in Paris, spearheaded by Shahan Vidal-Goren and Agnes Uzunyan, both a linguist and a mathematician slash linguist, coming together with software developers in order to do just what we've heard about Hebrew manuscripts and Chinese manuscripts earlier today, namely to develop a way of digitally reading and processing these manuscripts, working on the basis of the holdings in the BNF, with a basically OCR, neural network-based OCR, The delightful thing, of course, is that they have not just instituted this and made Armenian manuscripts digitally available and transcribed, but have on that basis also developed this delightful tool where one can compare the various letter shapes that occur across time. I've here just sorted for the capital letter IPE, and not specified whether I'm only looking at books or various other things. So this is very useful as a, let's say, a training tool even for those engaging in paleography in the first place. More importantly for me as a historical linguist, it also feeds into a dictionary of classical Armenian, or a set of dictionaries, by providing you with lookup tools. So if I'm looking for a particular word in the dictionary, I can then go to the actual manuscript pages on which such words occur. And that is particularly useful in a culture and text tradition where a critical analysis of manuscripts has not been at the forefront of people's minds, and where having an apparatus criticus is a not quite a novelty, but a, still a very new thing. So having actual manuscripts to look at and compare is extremely useful. I'm also going to do some self-advertisement by talking about one project that Emilio Bonfilio from Boazice University and myself have started a few years ago. We want to, and are in the process of developing, a manual of Armenian codicology and paleography as a basic teaching tool, a primer, if you will, for Armenian language-based manuscript studies, largely for one particular reason, namely that Armenian is not taught widely enough across European and universities and internationally, and where it is taught, it often does not have any manuscript depositories in it as a backing. Wherefore, we thought it would be useful to have a freely accessible, pedagogically-minded online resource for that very purpose. With help from the Mellon Foundation, we've been able to digitize about 100 disconnected folio from Bodleian manuscripts from various genres, various time periods, and containing various scripts for the express purpose of compiling a manuscript, a manual that would help students, either those learning classical Armenian or those having to deal, for one reason or another, with Armenian manuscripts, to study how to engage these various forms of the script. The like most or all of the current digital Bodleian holdings, these are IIIF compatible images, and we hope to at some point expand beyond what the Bodleian itself has to offer and go to other Armenian holdings like that of the British Library, and one day maybe the Matan Adaran. But at the moment, we only have the pictures themselves and the skeleton of a of this manual, and I can show you, hopefully, what it looks like at present. So this is the currently only Oxford internally available interface and website, which then, for example, lets you look at the various images, zooming in as you are aware. And what we have here is the section on musical manuscripts with the various neumes, the chaz in there. If you zoom in very closely, for instance, you can see that extremely inconveniently, some Armenian manuscripts do not differentiate whether only letters or also chaz are written on the same line. So if you go back to your alphabet handout, you will not be able to find this particular letter or diagram or ligature there, simply because it doesn't exist. That is a chaz, a musical notation. And you see here that they are pretty much all over the place, including over the line and in the line. And that is something that the text underneath and above the various image representations then talks about. What is particularly good about the interface that we hope to develop further is the ability of the user to annotate each image for themselves if they've made an account, and to ask questions that the administrators, as it were, can see and then interactively answer as and when. If you not look at the bad request, but add this image as well, the good point is that we can equally put attention of the visitor, of the reader, on a specific aspect of the manuscript by showing them a blown up aspect of the manuscript, a blown up passage, rather than just telling them it is in line 25 of this page of the manuscript. And that, we hope, will prove in time and with approved funding applications a useful way of introducing people to manuscripts without a teacher present. That having been said, I say thank you. That's my introduction, and David will now take you to the more interesting part of colophones.